You're listening to the Slavic Literature Pod, your shelf help guide to all things Slavic.
I'm Cameron Lolana.
And I'm Matt Garasimovic.
And today we're covering part two, chapter 36 of Vasily Grossman's Life and Fate, covering Krimov's return to the rear command. Among his other, you know, commissar brethren, which is really comfortable for everyone, and everyone in there is having a good, carefree, very open time. And he thinks back fondly on his time on House 6 slash 1, especially in his relationship with Commander Grekov. Is there anywhere that you'd like to begin in this chapter?
Yeah, I think this chapter is a profoundly awkward one where Krimov doesn't know what has happened to anybody in House 6-1, and he's really I don't know, he's kind of mentally got it out for them all. He still is on the Grekov shot me party, basically, and he is just feeling very frustrated with how that whole situation went down, not realizing that they have all died and the house itself has just turned to basically dust at this point. And there is this kind of tension throughout the whole chapter on whether he should denounce them, or sort of what should be the kind of path going forward. Though it seems to me that his report, more or less denouncing the situation in Grekov specifically, has already been submitted and gone through and been read. So it's just kind of some internal conflict, though it seems like the path has sort of already been been laid here. And in my post today, I kind of compared Krimov to the worst undercover boss that you can imagine, in the sense that he is really struggling still to understand why he really enjoyed fighting in the army in 1917, but he doesn't enjoy fighting for them in the 1940s. And I don't know how to tell him that it's just because he's in charge now.
Not as much fun, especially when you are in the apparatus, which I think Krimov is a very interesting character, where he is absolutely fine with using the full repressive power of the Bolshevik apparatus, especially as a commissar, to condemn people to death, to condemn the enemies of the revolution towards the end of the chapter. He thinks on all these old Bolsheviks who, of course it was right that's, good and right that Stalin had all these people killed. Stalin, Bukharin, Rykov, Zinoviev. Those are all, it was right that Stalin, had them killed. And yet he's uncomfortable in the position he's in. Not that he's aware of that, but as it's, said in the chapter, even though he's like, it's unclear whether or not he was hit by a stray bullet or from Grekov, but it really doesn't matter. What matters here is his interpretation of events, because he, as a commissar, and by virtue of being able to write a report, he gets to determine the reality of those events. So the fact that he is uncertain about that, I think, is very telling, especially when he's thinking about the fact that there's this one line: he felt the choke with anger. Grekov had exiled him from the life he had yearned for. On his way to the building, he had been joyfully conscious of a new turn in his destiny. He had believed that the spirit of Lenin was alive there. And then Grekov had fired a Leninist at an old Bolshevik. He had sent Krimov back to the stifling offices of the Aktuba, the swine. It's not something, it's even not even less, he's mad that he was shot potentially by Grekov, but the fact that he got sent back here to his own HQ rather than to some promised land that Grekov inhabits. And, to your point, he's why doesn't he enjoy it like what he did back in the 1917? Because it seems like his character is such that is he is still a true believer in what he's doing, and he wants to be doing the actual work of it rather than the work of enforcing it, which makes everything he does in the back lines really, tense. It makes it awkward, right? On the front lines, he's concerned with the winning or losing of the war. On the front lines, it's a matter of survival. Back here, what's the question? Well, there's a dark rumor that, now going forward, that commissars will only be lieutenants rather than some other level they would only be given the ranks of captain or lieutenant. Can you like imagine spending 6 years in the organs only to be made a lieutenant, or that they'd have to eat in the general general canteen rather than the canteen for, you know, special officers? There is this world where the commissars inhabit is almost different, and their concerns are almost different, almost as if their concerns are not winning the war, but rather getting ahead and getting the best benefits they can from their position. And I think Krimov at some unconscious level is aware of that, which is why he's so angry at Grekov specifically for exiling him from the world he seems to really want to be in.
Yeah, no, I think that's completely right. I think that when he sees Grekov, he's reminded of a position in which he used to be. And he feels, you know, exiled from that. He feels that he's no longer able to get into that position to hold that sort of authority. And he has authority within the party, but it's not the real authority that he wants. It's not the recognition among the men who are fighting that he is their leader. He is sort of conscious of the fact that he is in he's an imposed force that is not wanted on the front lines. And whether he is there or not, they are still fighting on. And quite frankly, achieving more than he is achieving. Based on the fact that he is sort of reduced to this role of just giving speeches that nobody cares about, despite the fact that he likes to sort of pump himself up and tell himself that he's really great at giving speeches, but nobody really seems to care. Nobody that hears his speeches, anyways, seems to really care about them or get really rallied up on them. And so it's kind of a sad situation of someone who is being relegated to neither helpful on the front lines and neither particularly sly or thoughtful in their maneuvering of the party politics. So he's sort of ending up in a kind of no man's land by this like two-thirds of the way through the book. So like you said, it's kind of uncomfortable for him and for us to have to watch him do that.
Right. Yeah, because taking going from Stalingrad to here, I think one of the things to pay attention to here is it's not just that everyone in this apparatus is some kind of degenerated person, right? Like, that's why they got into this. Krimov, if we take, Stalingrad on earnestly, is a great leader in his own right. He really seems to be someone who does care about doing the right thing according to his own morals. Maybe not morals that we would necessarily recognize, but he certainly has them. And it is the position which he's in which has degenerated him rather than his character which has brought him to this position, which I think you could read as sort of a critical examination of these, of the way these systems do incentivize certain people to move up into leadership, and those even among those who are not incentivized because of these certain like benefits, the true believers in a sense like Krimov, it then kneecaps them, right? They can't make it happen from within. They're ultimately limited by the sort of more opportunistic brethren of the who end up in leadership more often, perhaps by a cynical, more cynical evaluations of what they're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I think that's all I had to cover today.
Yeah, that was the main point of what I wanted to talk about today. So I think in that case, that means you will be hearing from us again soon.